Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Another busy week in tennis, a full slate of events all over the globe before everyone converges on Miami for the Miami Open. Our guest this week, Casper Ruud. He is 22, doesn't turn 23 until the week of Christmas. He is already the best Norwegian player in history. He's a lovely guy and he is rising the ranks. He's sort of a man without a country. Norway notwithstanding. He's a smidge too old for the Felix Auger-Aliassime Jannik Sinner cohort. He's a bit too young for the Zverev, Rublev, Medvedev cohort. But he's a fine player who has halved his ranking over the past 12 months or so. This is a fun conversation about Norway. He sells us on going to Norway, maybe even living in Norway. He talks about tennis and COVID, gives us some thoughts on the big three. He has a special affection for Nadal, having trained at the Nadal Academy in Mallorca. Fun conversation. I enjoyed this. I trust you will as well. Here from Acapulco, on a day off, is Casper Ruud.
How are you doing? How's your first visit to Acapulco?
It's good. It's a nice place. It's really hot here, so it's a bit of a challenge, I think, especially for me being from Norway, but it's I've gotten used to it and I enjoy now.
I want to ask you about Norway. We can talk tennis in a second, but did you know Norway sells more electric cars per capita than the U.S.? Did you? Have you seen that commercial? Have you seen Will Ferrell?
I didn't know I've seen that a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, I know that Norway is a big electric car country. We have like no taxes or anything on the electric cars, so it's I can imagine that it's bigger than I've heard. Like California and Norway are like the two biggest places for the electric cars.
Exactly. No, I feel like Norway. I don't know if you sense that coming from there. I feel like Norway is having a bit of a moment. It's become a very trendy country lately. I don't know if you feel that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's not like a very big country, and we're not too many people, but I feel like most of the Americans, they've heard about, you know, Denmark and Sweden, but not so much Norway. But hopefully the next years we can, Norway can show up on the map a little bit more.
But all right, keep going. What should people know about Norway?
Sorry?
How do you describe it? What should people know? I think you're right. People say, oh, Scandinavia, I've been to Copenhagen and I love, you know, Stockholm. What should people know about Norway?
I think that Norway is the best country in Scandinavia out of the three. It's a very nice and calm place. Like I said, we're not too many people. We're only 5 million or so. So it's a very well working country, I would say. And we have all four seasons. We have a beautiful summer. You know, I think many people refer it to, or when they think about Norway, they either, you know, see snow or they see like the beautiful mountains and the fjords that we have, like the scenery there and some cool mountains we have where you can kind of be on the edge of a very steep steep fall. So we have some kind of places, and not monuments, but like bucket list places to go, I think, if you're visiting Norway. And yeah, like I said, I like being from a country that has four seasons, even though, you know, winters are cold and it's can be a challenge sometimes for me traveling. But other than that, you know, we're I think we're a nice group of people and welcoming. We're happy to for anyone to come into the country and visit and stay as long as they want. So I mean, it's I think we're a good good kind of people.
Sold. You're a great ambassador. you sold me. What's the tennis scene like
in Norway?
Yeah,
it's not a very big tennis country. You know, like as you probably could guess, it's mostly like. Well, we do like 6 months of the year indoors and 6 months of the year outdoors. So, I mean, it's like a 50-50 split. And but the problem is kind of the tennis culture, you know, like other countries in Europe, let's say Germany or Italy or these places, you kind of have a club and you have a nice restaurant where you can hang out later and have some lunch or even dinner. And it's like a more like a hangout place than... And just a tennis club. But while in Norway we don't really have any clubs that work like that, you know, where you have a nice restaurant maybe owned by a local family or something like this, where you know people would play an hour or two and then hang out in the restaurant for a couple of hours. So I think that's what we're missing a little bit in Norway to become like a big tennis country, because yeah, like I said, that's a big thing in, I know, like Italy, France, Spain, Germany, you know, the places with, you know, cities that aren't the biggest, but they have like big tennis clubs and they have a restaurant, they have a gym or it's more like a complete package. So that's the only thing I would say that is missing when it comes to tennis clubs in Norway. And of course, we would like to have some more clubs around the country, and especially in Oslo, where I'm from, there are, you know, lack of courts these days, so it's growing. I would say that the tennis and more people are getting into it.
I'm thinking the best player in the history of Norway should go home and start a club like that.
Yeah, hopefully one day.
You're only 22. Tell me about Nadal's. I mean, you and I met there before COVID, which seems like a different world. Well, let me ask you too. I mean, are you? I feel like in the rest of the world, there's a sense things are snapping back and restaurants are starting to open and there'll be some crowds in Miami. What's the sense about COVID in the locker room among you guys? I mean, where are you with all this? Is anyone getting the vaccine? What's kind of the COVID status?
Well, no one is getting the vaccines yet. But I think, you know, majority of players are a bit worried, you know, these days to travel around too much. There's a risk everywhere we go. Obviously, we have restrictions at all tournaments. We live in the bubble every tournament we play. So, I mean, that's good. But it's still like, you know, you go through airports and there's always a risk wherever you go. And there's a risk to be, you know, test positive at a tournament and then be locked up for 14 days. That's like the biggest fear for the players, I think. So I think it's mixed feelings. Like some players, you know, are very, very afraid or scared, or I feel like they're risking too much. You know, you've had, I think, Gilles Simon recently, you know, announced that he would stay out of the tour for some time until he feels, you know, ready again and feels like the tour is able to be more like normal. And I think like the biggest fear among the players is, you know, let's say you would test positive maybe in Rome or the week before a Grand Slam and you would have to miss out on a Grand Slam because you test positive. I think that's like the biggest fear. So it's a bit mixed feelings. You know, I think we're all or I am at least, you know, happy we were able to play and compete. But it's also, you know, a matter of risk. And like I said, I think like airports are and airplanes are the biggest risk we go through when we're among other people. Obviously, we were wearing masks all the time when we're traveling, but it's still you know, your advice with this virus to not touch too much. But you know, in the day you touch a lot of things, and you, without knowing, you scratch yourself in the head, or you know, that's I guess that's kind of where you will get the virus from these days. That it's very very easy to get it from, you know, you just touching stuff and you touch yourself in your eye or ear or nose or whatever. So I guess that's like the biggest, one of the biggest fears for us also, you know, going through the airports and these things.
No word about when you're going to get vaccinated?
No, not for us. I mean, I think the majority of players would probably not want to get vaccinated, especially with this AstraZeneca, which are, you know, having some effects after the vaccine that you can get a bit sick. But I don't have too much to say about it, but no word on if we will get vaccinated at all.
Gotcha. So you were saying, I think, you know, but before any of this craziness, we were talking, I remember I had a very nice conversation with you at Nadal's at a different yeah. time in a different place. How'd you decide to go there, and what do you tell people about training in Mallorca? How do you describe it?
Well, I tell them that it's great. You know, you've been there, you've seen the facility, and they're expanding and growing also with a new, with like 15 new courts or something. So it's definitely one of the best, you know, for 10 places to focus on your career in tennis, to become a good tennis player in the world. And Mallorca is a nice place. It's a nice island, especially, you know, from March until November, December month. It's a great place to be. You know, you have the winter like everywhere else. That can be a little bit cold and windy and these things, especially Mallorca as it is an island. But you know, 10 or 9 months of the year, it's really beautiful and nice. So you have the tennis, and you also have a nice scenery where you can go and relax. So it's a perfect fit, I think, for a tennis player. And you know, look at Rafa, he's one of the greatest of all time, and that's where he's from, and has done all his life and training in Mallorca. So I guess that's a good indication of how good of a place it is.
What did you learn from him? What did you learn observing him?
I think just that, you know, I've been a fan of him since I was, you know, started watching tennis, and he's been my biggest idol and the one that I've looked up to the most of all the players. And I remember, you know, I think he was probably the first one I watched on TV, and you know, dreaming about being on TV myself, playing, you know, big tournaments and big matches. So he's kind of one of the reasons I really wanted to go for a professional career. And I remember, even from a young age, you know, when you're 8 or 10 years old, you it's just a dream. But then after, when you reach 12, 13, 14, it becomes more of a realization. I've observed him, you know, for many years already, and especially, you know, getting the chance to go there to Mallorca and become or see him up close and personal, and even practicing with him, it's been a very big motivation. And I think I've learned the most that, you know, even though how much he's won, he's still, you know, extremely humble and works as hard today as he did 15 years ago, and he wants to go for more and more. And I think that's you know, one of the things that, you know, defines him as a tennis player. You know, how hard of a worker he is, and how humble he is, and how determined he is to become a better player all the time.
I was looking for you on social media. If you didn't know better, I would think you were a golfer that yeah, played a little bit of tennis. Well, you have a very nice swing, but I'm wondering, I mean,
thank
is
you.
The golf a distraction, or is there stuff from the golf that you can incorporate into your tennis?
Not really. I mean, it's eye-hand coordination, both things, but the swing is like you have some similarities, you know, when generating power from your hips and legs. So that's like one thing that I would say is the same. So I'm sure, you know, many players on the ATP Tour could hit a golf or a driver pretty far because we have a lot of explosiveness and power if we hit it well. So I think that's a resemblance, but I mean, golf is something else. I mean, you have way more time, I think, in between your shots. In a tennis match, you probably hit thousands of shots, but in a golf round, you try to hit as few shots as possible. So you're between 60 and 70 shots usually. So you hit way fewer shots in golf. But
speak for yourself. How many shots?
No, I mean, when you, no, not for me, but when you're a pro, I mean, okay, the professional guys, they,
right.
I mean, I'm between 70 and 80, so I can't say that I'm 60 to 70, but 70 to 80. So but in tennis, you hit, you know, probably hundreds or even thousands of shots during one match. So, but I think one thing that is, that has the most similarities. I think if you want to win the tournament, either in tennis or golf, you need to perform very well, you know, day in, day out for at least 4 days in golf. Tennis is usually five or six, where you play a new match every day. So I think, you know, the focus you have in both sports needs to be on top throughout the whole week. And golf is more, you know, weekend from Thursday to Sunday. But you know, in tennis, you also finish on a Sunday usually, and the final is on a Sunday. So there are some things, but I use it mostly for my own pleasure and fun and enjoying the game, enjoying, you know, days off on the golf course. It's you know, the one thing that I like about golf is that you don't have to run as much as tennis.
Oh. You're the I think you're in the running for best golfer in the history of Norway too, though.
No.
What's the best course you played?
I've played a couple good ones in the States. It's tough to say. I mean, I played one in Orlando that is called Lake Nona, which I thought was really nice. Okay. It's more like a private club where you need to play with a member or be invited by a member, so it's not the easiest to get on, but I was lucky enough a couple of years ago to play there, and you know, the conditions were just great. I know a lot of PGA players, they live there on the area. You know you have James Poulter and these guys staying there, living there and having their base there. So that was a really fun experience. And some other places in Florida, I've played one course called Stream Song, which is bit further south, and I wanted to play the TPC Sawgrass last time I was there, but they'd just done the sanding of the greens and everything, so it was a bit of the conditions weren't, you know, what we were hoping for, and it was still $500, so it was I didn't feel like paying $500 to play on sanded greens. So I will probably go there one time in my life to play TPC Sawgrass, because I just watched it on the TV last week when Thomas won, and it just looks amazing.
You just need to walk up to the pro shop and say, "I'm the best tennis player in the history of Norway," and so they cover your green fees. What I wanted to ask you. So you're 22 years old. I think your ranking, you've cut it by half in the last 12 months. If this were a stock, it's very much headed in the right direction. But I'm kind of curious, for someone in your position, what is your relationship with these three guys at the top that have won 58 majors among them? I mean, where are you sort of relative to the big three, and what is the dynamic between a guy like you, 10 years younger, 12 years younger, 15 years younger in the case of Roger, than the rest of the field? How does that sort of align?
I think they're all great guys, and you know, I know Rafa the best, obviously, but I played against Roger and Novak in a match, and they were nice to me, you know, both on the court and off the court after the match. And you know, when I see them, they say hi, they come up to me and say hi, you know, how you're doing and all these things, and I think that's really nice, because you know, they have probably hundreds and thousands of people in their life that they can say hi to, and that they actually, you know, come to say hi to me in the gym or whatever it is. I think that shows, you know, that they're great guys, and you know, the last time was Djokovic at the Australian Open. You know, he didn't have to come and say hi to me in the gym when I was warming up, but he still did, and I thought it was nice. So they're nice guys, and they know how to you know, behave well, and they've been in the game for a long time, and I think they also have some experience from when they were growing up, and maybe, you know, I don't know, Sampras came to Roger when he was young maybe and said hi, and maybe Roger, you know, felt, you know, that was a cool thing, and then, you know, I'm sure he had someone he looked up to and wants to not copy, but I'm sure he knows that it's a nice feeling for the young guys to be greeted by him and you know, all three of the guys. But you know, I would say I know Rafa better, and we say hi all the time. We see each other at the tournaments, and he's following up. He sends me some messages here and there when I play matches and do well. So he's the he's the closest I'm to. But the two other ones are just as nice as him.
Right. What do you think the difference is? Biggest difference, best of three versus best of five? I mean, it seems like you guys really get your teeth into these events, you know, the 500s and the 1000s and even the 250s. And then when it moves to best of five and you're playing majors, it's the three guys are still winning a lot. What's the biggest difference, best of three, best of five?
I think for me, it's the physical part. I think it's tough to you know, when you play tough five setters or even tough four setters, it's something else than playing a tough three setter. Even though you have a day off the day after, usually at a Grand Slam, it's just for me, I felt like Australian Open, you know, this year where I did the best, it was tough to get the body 100% ready for every match, because you're basically tearing your body apart for every match you play in the best out of five sets. So you're playing three sets at least every match, and I think that the three best ones know they know this, so I feel like they're very sharp in the opening rounds, and they very rarely give away any sets, because they know that it's much more comfortable to win in straight sets than having to play four or five sets. But obviously they're still able to play five sets if they have to in the first round, and then be ready for the second round. So I think a little bit of experience on how they've done this in the past, that they know how to recover well, and they know, you know, what's important and what's not as important. But you see, like Rafa, how greedy he is usually in the first rounds, first stages in the major, because he, you know, he'd rather save the energy for the semifinal or the finals or the quarterfinals or whenever it might be, where he really has to suffer. And you know, it surprised me, you know, how well Tsitsipas came back from 2-0 down against Rafa at the Australian Open, where you know, Rafa was up two sets to love, and it's not often that he loses when he's up 2-0. But you know, Tsitsipas really showed that he was there for it. He was physically strong enough, and mentally also. I think it's a complete package with physically and mentally. But I think for me, I think I felt, at least for now, that it's much tougher physically to play best out of five sets than three, because yeah, you know that you're at least playing three sets and the hours are way more than a best out of three match. You can get out of you know, yesterday I played 1 hour and 10 or 15 minutes, but at the Grand Slam you would probably at least have to play 2 hours or two and a half for sure. It doesn't matter how easy you win. I mean, if you win straight, I mean, you know, Roger has won, you know, some matches in 1 hour and 30 or these things, but that's not normal. But usually you have to be 2 hours on court at least every match you play in the Grand Slam, and that's a little bit more and more than usual, or more than the best out of three sets.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I saw when you were in Australia, I saw you had a great line. You said sort of now more than ever, I don't have it in front of me, but the words were to the effect of, it's now more than ever, it's very important to stay positive. But sort of with not just the quarantine, but with the travel and with the uncertainty, being positive is very important. I think there's a lot to that. What are you optimistic about right now? What is the greatest source of positive for you right now?
Well, I think that, you know, when we come to the summer times, you know, around Wimbledon times, that's what they kind of speculate or hope for, that, you know, things will be almost back to normal. I think we've been saying that for the last months, you know, all the time. But, you know, now as we get more people get vaccinated, you know, more and more people can probably come to the tournaments, watching again, and spectators, and we will see what will happen to us players, if we can move around more than before, or if it's still bubble for us. But I think, like, what motivates, you know, most of players now, I think it's just, you know, living like normal again and not having to do the bubble life, because the you know, it sounds, I mean, I think it's, we are a bit spoiled that we can, you know, complain about the bubble life, because usually we are very well taken care of at the tournaments, and we have a very nice and comfortable life. So, you know, there are many people in the world that are suffering way more than us, who have to be in a bubble kind of thing. But it's, but I think that's, you know, motivation, and, you know, like a light in the tunnel for us players, that, you know, we are allowed to go out and have a dinner, or, you know, walk around in the city, and these things, because it's obvious that the bubble life is a challenge in another way than what our usual lives are. But so I think, and that's for me as well, you know, to be able to, let's say, play Wimbledon, and you go out and have a, or New York, you play the US Open, you go to a nice restaurant on Manhattan after a good win or a good match, and these things are, you know, things that we enjoy as players, because we're so focused on our careers and play tennis so much, that it's nice to kind of break it off at night with a nice, you know, meal in a restaurant, or walking around in the city, seeing the skyline for half an hour. Or these things are nice ways for us, and nice ways for us to kind of think about something else. And that's not as easy now when we're in the bubble, but we I think that's, yeah, one of the biggest motivations for the players these days.
All right, one more question. You did such a great job of selling Norway. If you were a casual tennis fan, and, you know, hey, there's this young kid from Norway, and he hits a nice golf ball, and he has a nice two-handed backhand. If you're a fan of Casper Ruud, what are you getting? What are you signing up for? If I want to support you, what are you looking to provide me with?
Well, I think that you will see. I hope some consistency. You know, I'm not the player with, you know, a big flashy game, I would say, but it's quite consistent, and I try to play as aggressive as I can, but I don't mind, you know, being on the defense either. And, you know, some people would probably look at me as a grinder, because I do well on clay and play with more topspin than maybe others. And like I said, I'm not like the biggest flashy or show off player there is, but I have some. In my mind, at least, some cool winners as well, and some big winners. You know, I like to run around with a forehand as well, and go for my winners with a forehand. So, but I think you know, consistency and you can probably say a little bit boring compared to other flashy players, but you know, I can't do the jumping backhand like Chapo, or the or the crazy passings like Medvedev, or these things, but. I'm sticking to my game, and if you're a fan of me, you will have a good look at what my game is, and you will have a good sense of my game plan, I think.
Good answer. You sold yourself a little short. You're plenty fun to watch. All right. Last time I saw you, you were number 50. You're number 25 now. So next time we see each other, I want you to be 12 and a half.
Okay. I would hope you would say one, because then I would split it again. Like we met on the halfway, but I think that's a long way until. But hopefully, I will sign up for 12 and a half.
Train's moving in the right direction. It's like the battery powered car from Norway. Everything's going in the right direction.
Correct.
This was fun. I enjoyed this. Thanks.
Great
time.
Yeah, no worries. I'll have to go get going for some warm up.
Go warm up. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Perfect. Bye.
Okay, thanks for Casper Ruud. Fun conversation. That is a self-possessed 22-year-old. Look to him for a lot more good stuff on the tennis court. He sells his game a bit short, too, if I'm allowed to say that. He may not have the trick shot arsenal of Nick Kyrgios, but he's good fun to watch. Casper Ruud is. Thanks to Casper. Thanks to Jamie. Thanks to our friend Greg Sharko for the suggestion. Again, Jamie always is doing great handiwork behind the scenes, technical prestidigitation to make this happen. Thanks to you all for listening. Keep the guest suggestions coming. Leave a review. Subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Check out Richard Evans' new tennis book, by the way. We're off next week, but we'll be back soon with another guest. Have a good week, everyone. Take care.